Today, I'm coming for your cash. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. And I'm joined by Robbie Barwick from the Citizens Party with a very important conversation about the future of cash.
Hi, Martin.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. No, they're coming for our cash, or play on words, they're coming for our cash, because the guy who's put up his, who showed his hand, is none other than the CEO of Commonwealth Bank, Matt Comyn. And maybe he wasn't paying attention in 2019, 2020, Martin, when the government, the Morrison government, tried to ban cash transactions over $10,000, because he's floated the idea of banning cash transactions over $500. Well, you know, if the Australians weren't going to cop 10,000, they're not going to cop 500. But we got to nip this in the bud, because what he's showing is clearly the banker's intent, and it's the people are going to have to save cash themselves. And I think we're well on the way to doing that, but the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, and we have to have this discussion tonight to make sure that we stay vigilant.
Yes. And of course, there is still a thematic around the world in some countries where, you know, cash is being talked out of the system, one way or the other. But it's interesting to note that in some European countries now, more buttresses are being put in place. Like in the UK, there's now an assurance that cash will be accessible within a certain number of miles from individual locations. And I notice in some US states, there's now confirmation that you can always use cash. So, you know, there's an interesting pivot going on here. And I'm fascinated that in Australia, we still seem to be being fed by, of course, the banks, that cash is gone, you know, don't need it anymore. Despite the fact, of course, that on the 2nd of April, there was a very significant initiative amongst Australians to pull cash out of the system and show that cash is important. In fact, I made a show on that last weekend, which went viral. And the early feedback is that there was a lot of use of cash. And of course, we know cash is good.
Well, it's good because it's necessary, and it does the job, and it does the job under all conditions, and it's the only medium that does do the job under all conditions. And that's it, pure and simple. And anyone who wants to take away the one medium that does the job under all conditions has an ulterior motive, has a nefarious agenda, and we have to expose that. But you're right. It's now Wednesday, of course, as we're recording this. Yesterday was what they called Cash Out Tuesday. And it was big. It got wall-to-wall media coverage, quite extraordinary. All the main, you know, television channels and radio stations, etc., covered it. Raced around social media in a very big way. Lots and lots of Facebook posts, and then there was lots of sharing on the internet yesterday of people going to ATMs to withdraw cash. Apparently, I've been informed by some of the organisers of the campaign that this is going to show up in the statistics that the RBA keeps on cash withdrawals that'll come out next month. It'll be the statistic for April. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of spike happened on the day, on Tuesday. But anecdotally, at least, all the signs are there that it was enormous. Lots of these pictures on Facebook. And there was even one picture, we should probably put it up. I think we can find it easily enough, of a National Party Senator, Lou O'Brien. He made a big post about cash. Now they're jumping on a bandwagon, but that's good, right? The bandwagon's going in the right direction. I mean, politicians like jumping on bandwagons, and they'll never start one, right? But they like jumping on them, and that tells you they're recognizing that this is a bandwagon. Now, Martin, you had a really big your show that you referred to last week was huge. You got lots and lots of views. It's gone viral. And a lot of it was the testimony of the Reserve Bank to the Senate inquiry into bank closures in regional Australia. And I think it's a really good study into why the devil's in the detail in this stuff, because it's good having those kind of regulations put on, like you referred to in Europe, But you got to understand the definitions of this stuff. And when you listen to the Reserve Bank talk, you can see how, as one of the regulators of the banks in Australia, it has allowed this situation to happen where the banks have aggressively forced us, not followed us, as they claim, forced us to go cashless. And I think we need to talk about some of those details, right? I just want to mention a couple of them because they're quite instructive. But just to preface it by saying, you know, in 2019, 2020, we meaning us in the Citizens Party, you with Walk the World and Digital Finance Analytics, the one and only John Adams. I was about to call him the late, great John Adams because no one's seen him for a while.
But, he still exists.
But he's around. He's around. Get on his YouTube page, people, and ask where he is. John Adams played an enormous role in this. And we ran one of the most effective campaigns ever seen in Australia. And we stopped the Morrison government from banning cash transactions over $10,000, right, as I said. And it was clear by the end of that campaign that the politicians wanted nothing to do with this idea of getting rid of cash. But what's happened since then is they've sat on their hands and allowed the banks to effectively force us to go cashless by taking away the sources of cash, the availability of cash, the easy access to cash, and the easy processing of cash by closing bank branches and ripping out ATMs. And the problem is that reality that's of what has driven this process doesn't show up in the statistics or the kind of statistics that the RBA chooses to keep. So you got to look very carefully at the kinds of claims that they're making, right? And I just want to highlight a couple. One of them was the RBA kept referring to this consumer survey it does every 3 years, which has shown that the main headline was since 2007, cash, the percentage of transactions that were made in cash was about 60, between 60 and 70, something like that. And the last survey that they reported in December was 13%. So that's a massive plunge. And they acknowledged under questioning from Senator Malcolm Roberts, though, that the biggest plunge was during COVID. And of course, COVID was a factor. Right? Everyone was being told, do not use cash, even though, you know, you and I did a show together where we cited the Australian Mint saying, you know, all your germ concerns are unfounded. Or, you know, the University of Ballarat did a study saying, no, cash is not a vector, you know, for disease spreading and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, people stopped using cash. So they admitted that it had plunged like that, but they held up this survey. Look, we do a consumer survey every 3 years, and it's got this consistent. So Australians aren't using cash. Well, Dale Webster, the independent journalist, was particularly interested, or I should say incensed, by the way the Reserve Bank presented the survey, because this is a survey of 1,000 people that's supposed to represent the spending habits of 27 million people. And they say, oh, yeah, but they're selected and weighted and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, you don't get to see all the details of how they do that, right? And they're making these sweeping claims, which, frankly, where it got really incredulous is when they said that the 13% that the survey showed people, you know, use cash for transactions also held true for the rural people that were represented in the survey. And that is just bizarre. Forget it. That is ridiculous, right? 13%, my butt. But that's what the Reserve Bank claims. So you see there that the devil is in the detail of how they choose to, one, create the sample and who they stack the sample with, right? And I think, you know, you and I actually talked about this last year where I made the observation, you know, you do your own survey and your sample ends up being what, over the course of a year, 50,000 people. This is 1,000 people over 3 years. You survey 50,000 people or households over 1 year, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's an enormous difference.
Yeah.
So folks, if you want to trust it, one survey or the other, I present to you the DFA household survey has a lot more credibility than the RBA cash survey, right? So that's one point to make about it. The other thing they claimed, and this goes to this regulation of, cash sources have to be within a certain distance, minimum distance of people. I think the UK has instituted this. So did you hear the RBA in this exchange with the senators? The RBA actually claimed that despite all the closures of bank branches over the last 10 years, it is the minimum distance most Australians are from a source of cash has barely changed. Now, that only makes sense if you understand something that the one thing that explains it, which most people won't automatically understand until it's pointed out to them. There's only one thing that explains that, and that is the post office network. The post office network there's 4,000 post offices in Australia. There's more post offices than there are bank branches now, 4,000. And they haven't changed. Now, in the last year or so, Australia Post has started closing post offices, but the 4,000, so it's gone from 4,200 or so to a bit over, just over 4,000 now. They closed some corporate post offices. But maybe we can put up the map here of the that we use, which is this lovely map of Australia with all the dots that show the where the post offices are. It's got the Australia Post has the best geographic spread and footprint of any business in Australia, including, and I often like pointing out to people all the dots up the middle of Australia there. No other business has that kind of representation in the Australian heartland. And by heartland, I mean the red center, not the actual heartland as in, where the majority of people live, because it's the minority of people live there. But nevertheless, there's this massive representation of post offices, which no commercial business would ever bother to do, right? Australia Post does it. That's why, despite all the branch closures of the banks, that Australians are still within a certain distance of cash access, because you can get cash from Australia Post. However, again, Martin, the devil's in the detail, because is the cash access at Australia Post the same as the cash access you get at a bank branch? So you can go to a bank branch. Nowadays, you have to call ahead, of course, because the banks don't carry massive amounts of cash as well. But you can call ahead and say, I want to get $10,000, I want to get $20,000, I want to get $50,000, I want to get $100,000. They'll ask you what you want it for, right? But nevertheless, you can make an appointment to go and get any quantity of cash within reason that you require. And it should be unlimited, of course. If it's your cash, it's your cash. But nevertheless, you can do that. You cannot do that at a post office. You just can't. There are severe restrictions on what you can deposit and what you can withdraw from post offices. Those restrictions, by the way, are not imposed by the post office. They're imposed by the banks themselves. So if you were banking at the bank, at an actual bank branch, you could have, for all intents and purposes, unlimited cash withdrawal if you arrange it. At a post office, I think it's for a lot of banks, it's $2,000 limit on cash withdrawal, $7,000 limit on cash deposits, things like that, right? Mm. So qualitatively, it is not the same at all. But the Reserve Bank, the fact that this Reserve Bank official waved this around saying, despite all the branch closures, people still got access to cash, qualitatively, it ain't the same thing at all. And I think there's two examples of why, if that's the rubbish that's coming out of the Reserve Bank, why the banks have got away with what they've got away with for now. But my final point on the Reserve Bank is this little bit of good news. There was a little tidbit in there where, again, under the questioning of the senators, the same official made the point that despite this really dramatic plunge from the last survey to the most recent one, the previous survey to the most recent one, over the COVID period, down to 13% cash as a percentage of transactions. He did make the point that they have other ways of measuring cash use. And none of the senators followed up on this, unfortunately. So I didn't get to hear an elaboration of how they do it, but they have other ways of measuring cash use. And those other ways are telling them that is stabilized. And if anything, it is starting to inch upwards. And that there is the impact of our broader campaign, use it or lose it campaign, to get people back to using cash to send the message that you've got to use it or we'll lose it, which is what the Tuesday event was about. The message is starting to get through. People are commenting on it. Businesses are commenting on it. They're noticing the increased use of cash. Social media has been very effective in this way. So that is quite a good sign. It means the message is getting out there. Now, what we've got to do is nip Matt Common's bullshit in the bud.
Absolutely. Well, it is interesting, Robbie. The couple of points from what you've said. Of course, if you're an ANZ customer, then you're not allowed to use Australia Post. So, it's not all customers handled equally with regard to access to cash, because ANZ chose not to actually partner with Australia Post. And as you say, there are some significant limitations on what you can withdraw. I'd also make the point that 1,000 is just not enough to have a representative sample across the country. Because if you look at it in distributional terms, then you're going to be waiting towards the major centres, clearly. One of the issues with my surveys and why I actually did the 52,000 is to get enough sampling out in the regions. And in fact, I published as part of my submission to the regional inquiry into branches and their closure, some data out of my surveys that showed that, in fact, in regional areas, the need to access cash was significantly higher, but the ability to access cash was much lower. And that was, a few months ago. So that data is actually there, and that's based on the 52,000 rather than the 1,000. So again, there is actually other data. And I think the third point is, it's fascinating to watch how some younger people are now veering back towards using cash rather than just waving your phone or waving the card, because of the fact that you can control your finances better if you can actually feel the pain when you actually hand the cash over the counter rather than actually the other, which is effectively just wave it and it's like magic. And it's interesting, I was talking to some people who are involved in education of children with regard to money matters, and they're saying one of the biggest problems they've got is that kids just assume that money is infinite because of the way that you can just digitally waddle it, wave it around. So actually giving them real pocket money and giving them real cash, and then feeling the pain of actually paying in cash, it is actually, I think, pretty important. And it's actually providing a lot of feel that actually this is important. So youngsters are actually moving back the other way, and I think that's a very important. And the final point to make is, and it's a meme that's been around, but it's really important. If you use a $50 note and you pay it for something, and the business then pays for it for something, and it moves on around the system, it remains $50, right? Whereas that same transaction through the digital systems, every time the business pays it in, the bank clips the ticket. And so the value of that note goes down and down and down and down and disappears. And so the other factor here is, then there's a really important profit question, right? And about the value of money question. Cash holds value better than the digital stuff, because the digital stuff gets robbed every time it goes through the banking system.
It gets robbed by who? The banks, right? And not just the banks, the big other payments, global payments players like Visa and MasterCard. They actually fund these cashless campaigns. Hmm. Right? Visa and MasterCard put a lot of money into promoting cashlessness, and of course, banks are in it as well. And so now we have Matt Common. And I think we should talk about that for a minute, because we just need to remind people what a brain fart this was. Now, the way we should play the clip. So people, watch this clip of Matt Common, the way he mentioned this. He proposed this idea of a $500 cash limit or a cash ban.
Stop any payments over $5,000, maybe even lower, $500. Make them all sort of electronic. I think that's worth another five in terms of sort of capture and things of receipts.
Now, Martin, the thing with that, it comes across like a thought bubble, yes. Right? And in fact, I'm trying to find out whether he got advance notice of the questions, because he was answering a question. He had a series of ideas that he was just plucking off the top of his head, supposedly. Except, was he really plucking off the top of his head? He kind of seemed to have him, writing on his arm like he was cheating for a test or something, right? There might have been a little bit of preparation in this. He certainly had a list of ideas, and one of those was supposedly, in order to extract another $5 billion out of the economy for the tax man, he set a $5,000, nah, a $500 cash limit. And of course, what he's talking about is that that'll supposedly fix the quote unquote shadow economy, right? That's the he didn't use the term, but that's what they mean. The tax avoidance economy and that stuff. Now, we've heard this before though, right? So and just remind people in when Scott Morrison announced the cash ban, the $10,000 cash ban, it was based on a report from the Black Economy Task Force from 2018 that had been written, and I forget the gentleman's name. He passed away after this. So I'm not going to speak ill of him necessarily, but his position I will. He was the immediate former global chairman of KPMG, had written this report for the Black Economy Task Force, which recommended the banning of cash transactions over $10,000. Now, this was something that we thought, okay, we better look into this. Now, the first thing we noticed when we looked into the report is this report shamelessly blamed the so-called black economy on tradies, hairdressers, and lawnmower men dodging tax. That was the black economy. And it seemed to us, well, hang on. Of course, a little bit of that happens. We're not saying it doesn't. But the guy who wrote the report blaming them chaired one of the four global enterprises most responsible for assisting the biggest corporations and the richest individuals in the world to dodge collectively hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars in taxes to their respective governments around the world. That's the real shadow economy. That's the real black economy. And this guy was blaming that on tradies and hairdressers and law and guys who cut your lawn, right? What a joke. And for that, they had to ban cash transactions over $10,000 and with punishments attached, like sending you to jail if you spent over $10,000. And as one person I saw in Sydney as part of the campaign came up with a killer sign, Liberal Party policy is to jail you for spending your own money. We saw that was bogus straight away. Plus, we were able to look at the statistics from Europe, where it showed, because Europe has all these cash bans at various levels, and the cash bans have had effectively zero impact on the shadow economy, on the black economy. It has because the smart people and the criminal mind who wants to get around these things, they will always find a way. That is what they do. It's only the law-abiding people that are already not avoiding tax that stick to this stuff, right? So that was the experience from Europe. And then, thanks to our campaign, we forced the Senate inquiry into this bill to first one hearing and then a second hearing. And I want to say something about the chairman of that inquiry, Slade Brockman, actually. He chaired this Senate Economics Committee inquiry in 2019 and 2020. The first hearing, which I think was early December 2019, early December 2019, the first hearing was unbelievably powerful because there was this one senator in particular, the late Senator Alex Gallacher, Labor senator from South Australia. He sat there all day and he asked this succession of witnesses from the government, from various government agencies who were supposedly all there to explain why this ban was so important. All he said was, "Where is your evidence? What is your evidence that restricting cash will reduce the black economy, will reduce the shadow economy?" And every single witness in a row had zero evidence. Zero. Right? This was a policy with no evidentiary background foundation at all. Because the guy they put to that came up with the report was hopelessly convicted in the first place. They had an agenda to ban cash, and they were using a fake excuse. And when he saw that, he ridiculed the hell out of it. Senator Rex Patrick was there as well. He ridiculed the hell out of it. And then they had a follow-up hearing where John Adams gave testimony in a tour de force, and John was able to, if I'm remembering correctly, You'll kick me for this, but John was able to testify on how this kind of ban would trap people in the banking system, right, and expose them to things like negative interest rates, which seems a long time ago now, Martin. Negative interest rates. but exposing negative interest rates or policies like bail-in, and he gave very powerful testimony to that effect. And Senator Slade Brockman chaired the inquiry and wrote the report that basically said, well, the way they put it is this bill would need enormous number of amendments to improve it, and they proposed so many changes that eventually the government decided to pull it. And I wanted to mention Slade Brockman because in that hearing that you played last week with the RBA, Slade Brockman has participated in this bank branch closures inquiry. And when the Reserve Bank made claims about what they think cash is doing in the regions, and they assumed that it was being used for hoarding and things like that, Slade Brockman reacted so indignantly that they would make these assumptions of something they couldn't even measure. And I'm listening to his reaction because his reaction was spot on. And I'm listening to his reaction thinking, you learned something from that inquiry in 2019, 2020, didn't you, Slade? You learned these guys have no flipping clue what they're talking about. That's what you learn. And you're reacting like that based on actually learning something. That's the power of inquiries, people.
Absolutely. And it is interesting how the official, scorekeepers like the RBA seem to be able to sort of hedge and fudge and almost make it up as they go along. And got to understand, there's a doctrinal set of assumptions that the Reserve Bank has about the way that the economy works and the way it should work, which funnily is so massively aligned to the big banks that you have to ask, who are they actually acting for on all of this, right? Because the truth is, of course, the banks don't want to continue to handle cash. Why? Because it's more expensive than perhaps some other forms of payment, because you've got to shift it around, but also because the banks can make a profit on every transaction that's done digitally. And we see that again and again and again. So of course they want to actually generate more profits, but it's not in the interests of Australians to be disenfranchised from cash, not least, of course, because we know that when the power goes off, the digital goes off. And we've seen so many examples of that over the summer, where effectively people have not been able to transact simply because the systems have been down. And of course, major banks have had major issues with their systems too. So
Exactly.
having cash in the system is a critical element, and it also protects our liberty. And it means that there should be the freedom to do the things that we can currently do. And interestingly, of course, the fact of its legal tender, although there are some organizations who refuse to take legal tender for reasons that I don't fully understand. And the bottom line is, if we don't fight for it, we are going to lose it. But the momentum is definitely towards keeping cash in the system.
Well, we had there's a Jason Bryce, who we mentioned before, who is one of the helped organize the Cash Out Tuesday event. He Jason is the founder of Cash Welcome, and he started a petition on change.org for a cash and banking guarantee. And the reason he's calling it a cash and banking guarantee is because it goes to the reason, it actually goes to the reason why some businesses don't take cash, Martin. Now, there's two reasons businesses don't take cash. I think some of them sort of probably got have a deal with the banks where they were encouraged to pioneer being cashless. But for others, the lack of banking branches has made cash an increasingly difficult proposition for them. So the banks have caused this, right? Because they take cash, they get paid in cash, but they don't want to hold cash, right? Now, unlike say Coles and Woolies, who have worked out a pretty good system where they're happy to give lots of cash out, they're restricting it now because the cash supply is drying up. But previously, they're happy to give lots of cash out because that the more cash they give out that they're taking in, it saves them from banking it. But if you're a small business, that's a bit more difficult because you don't want you can give a bit of cash out, but you don't want someone coming in and say, "Can I have $500 cash out?" Because oh yeah, we're doing having a good day, but then That might blow you out, right? And suddenly you don't have enough cash for someone else. So they small businesses can't do that. So they may do cash out, they may not. Whatever happens, they have a pile of cash here, and it's a risk for them to hold that cash on their premises. They want to bank it. That's what the bank's for. But the bank used to be down the street from them, and now the bank's in another suburb if they live in a city, or in another town if they live in the country. And that's really difficult. And the bank comes along and says, "Well, just use this little plastic card, and you won't have to worry about that." Oh, there's charges though. And they're thinking, "Well, you're slugging me with all these expenses of having to travel with you to you anyway." So the banks cause this problem, and then they come along as a supposed solution. That's a bigger and bigger reason why businesses are doing that. But then along comes the Optus outage, or the power failure, or the CBA outage. When I arrived in Tom Price a couple of weeks ago, CBA's, probably one of the biggest and best banking apps in Australia. CBA went down. CBA's banking app went down. And when that happens, suddenly all these businesses can't transact, right? And they wish they could take cash. Some of them have started, some of them on the, I think on the, it was Optus outage, businesses were resorting to handwritten IOUs. Do you know what a handwritten IOU that started off as and formally evolved into over time? It's a thing called cash. That's what it is. And it comes in different denominations, so it's really convenient. You can have a bigger IOU, and I'll give you a smaller one in return. This was a great invention, this cash. Thank you, China. So this is the insanity of, what they've tried to do, what they're trying to do to us. Now, the other point to make, as you said, is that so the banks, their whole role in this is completely, self-interested, right? So they make money out of all the transactions. They make money out of all the data, and they want to collect all our data. And it's a NAB, the National Australia Bank, had to admit to Senator Malcolm Roberts 6 months ago in the hearing that they have no way of measuring knowing what people are doing with cash transactions, and they want to know. They want to know that. Not only does it do they get a, do they want a cut of it, they want to know it. They want to know what you're doing with your cash transaction, right? They'll put it through these AI predictive supercomputers and whatever, and they want to know what you're doing before you're doing it, so they can predict everything and they can fleece you even more. This is the brave new world they want, people, right? The other angle for the banks, though, you've already referred to it, is it actually does cost money to move cash around. Now, they have made this worse than they should, but nevertheless, so for the banks, there's an expense associated with cash. Matt Comyn, at the hearing in September, put a figure on it. It costs CBA $400 million to move cash around Australia. $400 million. And he complained about that. He first said, "Oh, we fully support cash." And then he complained that it costs $400 million. Now, let's get out the little baby violins, though, because $400 million is on the expenses side of the ledger. What is the profit side of his ledger after that $400 million is paid? $10 bloody billion. You big goddamn sook, Matt Comyn. $10 billion after you pay your $400 million, you big sook. Cry me a river. So that people in every part of Australia can have a reliable way of doing transactions when the power goes out. You want to sook about $400 million, which you still make $10 billion on? I mean, these people—they're so out of touch with the real world. I think if you talk to them face to face, you wouldn't find them disgusting human beings. But their willful ignorance of the real world around them, the real world that they impact, makes them disgusting human beings. Right? $400 million. And by the way, CBA would have the biggest bill, would move the most cash of all the banks. So the others would pay plenty of money as well, but no, we're not $400 million. So maybe $1 billion. Let's be generous. Maybe $1 billion in total. The Armour Guard probably wishes they're making that. Maybe $1 billion in total to move cash between banks that are making as a net profit $30 billion. All right. So anyway, they nevertheless, in their fantasy, they want to get rid of cash, that cash expense as well. And then let's just spend a minute or two on this more technical thing that you and I talked about. One little known part of this is that cash I want to explain this in simple terms. You can think of cash as state money, and state money exists in two forms, because or state money is one term, or RBA liabilities is another term. There is the central bank liabilities, and it exists in two forms: the actual physical cash and the deposits that banks have, the banks have in these exchange settlement accounts at the RBA. And that is, both of those are RBA liabilities. And when the money is in physical cash, it's an expense to the banks to move around. But if they reduce that, and that of the total money on issue, more and more of that is electronic and parked in the bank's accounts at the RBA, they're earning interest on that, Martin. And so there's over $100 billion we know in physical cash on issue in Australia at the moment, over $100 billion. In the last 2 years, interest, the cash rate, which is why it's called the cash rate has gone from 0.1% to 4.35%. The banks are earning that 4.35% overnight on the money they park at the RBA in those exchange settlement accounts. If more of that cash was in less in physical form and more in those accounts, they'd be earning 4.35% on that as well. No expense for moving it, 4.35% from the RBA for holding it there. That's about, if we were totally cashless, you're talking about an extra $5 billion that the banks can put in their pockets, right? These are all the, that's a big one. These are all the reasons that that Matt Comyn sits there and says, oh, let's put a $500 limit on cash transactions. Got nothing to do with the benefit of the Australian economy. These are different ways that the banks will make extra money by fleecing from us, monetizing our data, saving money on expenses, and earning more money in interest from the RBA. That's why they want us to go cashless.
Yeah, and just to add another thought bubble into the mix, Michelle Bullock quite recently floated the idea of charging for cash transactions as well, right? Oh, another revenue stream for the banks. And I think she got pretty much a short shrift from that idea, but it just shows you how disconnected these are from reality.
Yeah, no, they are, and that goes to the heart of what you already mentioned. When you look at the Reserve Bank's behavior, when it was set up, it was supposed to be the bank that rode shotgun on the private banks and actually kicked their butts. That's what it was for. And the private banks bitterly complained about that. And over time, they weakened it, et cetera. And it used to be the Commonwealth Bank, and they split off the Reserve Bank, and it became a separate bank as our central bank. And that now, when you look at its behavior, everything it does is facilitating the private banks ahead of the rest of the economy. And we've let them get away with it up until now, but you got to draw a line in the sand. And when the central bank is carrying on about this cashless stuff and accepting all the statistics in this superficial way that I've gone through, and not actually acknowledge that, hang on, the banks have caused this. This is not the market that you think it is. So when that's happening, and then the banks are getting so arrogant, they're saying, oh, well, hey, even though it was clear from 2019, 2020, the Australian people do not want cash limits. This the boss of the biggest banker in Australia says, oh, let's chuck on a $5,000, not $500 limit. Like, I'm bloody Nero, mate. It's my will, Well, go fiddle, mate, because you're going to burn down if you're going to, and I mean metaphorically, of course. If you think if you think you, this is going to fly, you got another thing coming. And I want to make one final point, Martin, because this is the reason why we push for a people's bank in post offices, a post office people's bank. Bring back a public bank, right? Because the RBA is responsible, as the hearing showed, from you played the excerpt from. The RBA is responsible for the wholesale distribution of cash. Senator Gerard Rennick showed them up, though, because they admitted they were responsible, but then they, when he said, well, why aren't you making sure it gets out in the regions? They said, oh, that's the private bank's job. And And of course, the private banks are closing down branches in the regions. So the RBA is deliberately doing this blind. It's not interested in knowing what's going on out there. If we had a public post office bank, so a government bank like the Commonwealth Bank was, started, open it up in every post office in Australia. You've got 4,000 branches overnight all around Australia. Biggest retail bank in Australia. It's the People's Bank. Deposits are fully guaranteed because it's owned by the government, right? And you have the option, if your bank is screwing you, you can move to the post office bank. That bank would essentially, in practice, be the retail arm of the Reserve Bank, which is a government bank as well, right? That would be the retail arm. And the Reserve Bank would have the best feedback of how much cash is actually needed in Australia and would have the Australia Post infrastructure and network to distribute that cash to all those branches, right? And you can cut out Armaguard, the Armaguard monopoly, you can cut out the banks, the private banks altogether. If they don't want to serve their customers, well, fine. And if they believe their own BS, they shouldn't care, right? You go and create a world of perfectly digital transactions, and you just leave us, the people who don't want that. You claim are a tiny, 13% of the population or whatever, right? However you choose to put it, you just leave that to us, and they shouldn't care. Of course they will, because they know they're full of it, right? But that's what you could do, and you can make sure overnight that everybody in Australia is always catered to under all conditions, and the private banks can adapt to that. And they will adapt to it, and they'll start finding ways to make money, and they will actually come back to cash, and they will try and pretend they're better than the public bank, and they'll do all sorts of deals to win you back, etc. And that's good. That's how competition is supposed to work. But that's what we don't have at the moment, because they're not competing with each other except on how to screw you. They're not competing on service, and this institution that we advocate will be essential to bring that back. And even if it doesn't bring the competition back because the private banks don't care, you will have a reliable source of banking and cash for all time in Australia in perpetuity. That's why it's such a good policy. And hopefully the regional bank closures inquiry report will reflect something like that. And if it doesn't, we will build on what's come out of this inquiry so far to keep fighting for that going forward.
Yeah, critical, absolutely critical for the future of Australia and Australians. And, it is important to reflect on the fact that a lot of the Reserve Bank's decisions are actually flowed from information that the private banks are providing them. And we know that the private banks are not actually tracking all of the information that they should be tracking. So even their own anecdotes around transactions are inappropriate or incorrect, when in fact the truth that we saw in the inquiry is that, in particularly regional areas, people are not able to transact. They're not able to do business. Small businesses can't do the things that they need to do. So we have a massive problem. But the good news is there is also a story and an opportunity to create for the future of Australians, a very different narrative. And, it's coming to the point of decision. And, I think we're both hoping that regional inquiry report is going to direct it the right way. It may not. There's always a risk. Think of the Financial Services Royal Commission. But nevertheless, I would argue the action is already happening. And the other point is, people out there are beginning to use cash more. And I think the more we talk about this, hopefully individuals will also reflect a little bit more on how it is that if you use cash, then you can support your local communities and you can support your local businesses much more effectively than if you just wave the card. So that's why this is a really important conversation. And Robbie, I really appreciate your time today. We'll continue preaching the gospel because we think this is really, really critical for the future of Australia.
Thanks, Martin, and thanks for staying plugged into Down Under. You help get the message out, and we'll nip this Matt Common rubbish in the bud. He's common for your cash, and he's not getting it.
Spot on. Thanks, Robbie. Talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Martin.